Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fearless Parent Radio. I'm Kelly Brogan, Medical Director, and we're here to talk today about unconventional parenting choices and informed healthcare decisions. So I am so excited to be joined by a kindred health warrior, Jennifer Fugo, and we'll be talking about essentially exploring gluten-free living. And this is a subject that I feel very passionately about, and I have my nose in the books most of the time reading the primary source literature about the role of gluten in health. But there is a huge gulf between the science and the implementation. And so I think that's absolutely where Jennifer shines. So let me tell you a little bit about her. She is the founder of Gluten Free School, and she teaches gluten-sensitive individuals simple, savvy, and empowering steps to get healthy. Living gluten-free since early 2008 after a gluten sensitivity diagnosis, she knows what it's like to feel overwhelmed by the cost and seemingly complicated aspects of going gluten-free. She's a sought-after expert, advocate, and speaker about healthy gluten-free living, and Jennifer's been featured on Dr. Oz, Yahoo News, eHouse, CNN, and Philadelphia Magazine, and is the best-selling author behind the groundbreaking book, The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper, How to Eat Healthy Without Breaking the Bank. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Brogan. I'm
Absolutely.
Really excited to be here.
Absolutely. It's about time. We've been wanting you on the show for a long time, and you've been integrally involved with our efforts here at Fearless Parents, so it's exciting to be able to pick your brain for a couple minutes here. So maybe we can start out with, you know, I think you just do a tremendous job translating the science to the average person who's interested in sort of, you know, taking next steps in terms of their health trajectory. So maybe we can just start out I'd love to hear a little bit about your story and to sort of break down for people how it is that you learned to talk about gluten. What is it? What's its relevance to health from your perspective? And then we can sort of get into the nuts and bolts of your expertise in terms of day-to-day living this way.
Yeah, so like most people in the, I guess, health and wellness world, you get someplace because you got sick.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us have that similar thread to all of our stories. And I come from an Italian background, so naturally the food that I was eating was pasta and bread. I mean, I was a pastaholic. Mm-hmm. I could down baskets of bread when we would go out to eat. And I never really thought anything of it, that anything was wrong with that, because I watched my family eat that way. Now, mind you, you know, I seemed okay as a kid, and I will go back to some things that I found out later were actually problems, but I thought everything was normal. And in my 20s, I started to have quote-unquote bathroom issues, where, for example, I would be, say, out to dinner at an Italian restaurant, no less, eating my meal of probably some sort of spaghetti or pasta, and I would become incredibly sick to my stomach, to the point where if I did not run to the bathroom, I was going to have a major embarrassing problem, like in the middle of the restaurant, because I would get such intense, like, gas, bloating, and diarrhea, like, so bad that I was like trying my best not to run to the bathroom. Mm. Like, I don't know if you've ever had that experience of trying, you know, you're sweating bullets, you feel awful, but you don't want anyone around you to know that anything is wrong.
It's so disabling. That's so disabling, yeah.
And it's embarrassing. It makes you feel like you can't go out. You can't have a life. And what's worse is you come back to the table, and 10 minutes later, you feel sick all over again, but you're too embarrassed to tell the person or the people you're out with that, hey, I got to go to the bathroom again, because now they're going to ask questions. So, you know, I started to experience this more and more. I had increasing fatigue. I didn't feel well. And eventually, I went to the doctors to see more or less what was going on with the fatigue. I thought the bathroom issues were normal, but they really weren't. And he didn't know what was going on. He said, maybe take some more B vitamins. Your blood panel looks fine. I don't know what to tell you. Mm-hmm. And eventually I ended up at someone's office who did believe me. And in looking at my food journal, said, you know, I think you have a lot of potential food intolerant type foods or allergen foods in your diet. And maybe if you'd be willing, for like 2 weeks, could you take gluten out and just see what happens? And within 3 days of agreeing to do this, and by the way, I had no idea what gluten even was.
Right.
I had to have a
so
whole
explanation of this. So did that strike you as a totally overwhelming sort of prospect to even think about doing that?
Yes and no. Because on one hand, there was this light potentially at the end of the tunnel that no one had suggested before. So I was like, okay, well, if I could do this, if I could just take gluten out, then, and I feel better, then, oh my gosh, like I would get my life back.
It'd be worth it.
I was like 27 years old at the time, and I was so exhausted, I couldn't get out of bed after sleeping for 11 hours. I felt drugged. So I was not living a normal life. I didn't feel well often. So the prospect of returning to vibrancy and being able to go out without being afraid of where that I wasn't going to find a bathroom in time, you know, there's something freeing about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so after 3 days, I felt so much better that I can't even tell you. I called the nutritionist and said, you know, it feels like my stomach problems are gone, except periodically I'll get really sick, but I can't pinpoint it. I don't know what it is. We did some food allergy testing, and it came to be that I'm also sensitive to eggs and the casein protein. So I went from just being gluten sensitive, at least in my mind in the moment, to then having these other two major food families removed from my diet, which the three of those were like the bulk of what I was eating. And that became a bit overwhelming when it was like, here's three websites. I'll talk to you in 8 weeks. Good luck. And I had to figure it out for myself of how to change my diet, learn how to cook. And you know what? I did do it. I started reading. I started just taking simple steps. I did make the mistake of swapping out a lot of gluten-free products for, you know, the regular pasta and the brownies and the cupcakes and things. And really, they weren't very good either, especially not back then. But I felt better. And my transformation within 8 weeks is actually quite astonishing. I have a before and after photo that on my website.
I love that, yes.
I don't even look like the same person.
Yes.
So I lost about 20 pounds of inflammation. It's really important that I think there's this weird divide in the gluten-free world that people don't want the diet to be used as a weight loss gimmick, and it shouldn't be, I agree. However, people can lose weight. And I believe that weight a lot of times can be inflammation that's in your system. And that's definitely what it looks like for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I stopped having headaches, which now we'll go back to, oh, I said I was fine all those years as a young child. I had chronic headaches since I was in high school, so bad that I'd have to carry Tylenol around with me all the time. Turns out those headaches were the result of eating gluten. And so my skin started to clear up. I got my energy back. I was able to wake up in the morning without an alarm. My mind was sharp and clear and focused. I just felt so much better. Like I got a new lease on life.
Mm.
And a year later, I got sick again. Because again, I made that mistake of swapping out too many things for gluten-free products. And I didn't focus on eating real food. And so I had to deal with the adrenal fatigue and the candida that ensued. And now I'm here in this much different space working to enlighten and inspire people, especially women in the same boat as I am, to make meaningful health choices that make sense. Not that they make two choices and they make 10 changes and all those changes, while they're helpful, end up putting them into another hole, you know, a year down the road. So let's avoid the hole. Let's avoid the potholes as best we can and do this so you don't lose your life. And for me, that's really the most important thing. And as far as, you know, what is gluten? I mean, I'm sure a lot of your audience knows, but gluten is that spongy protein that's found in certain grains. It's most notably in wheat, which is why everybody mixes it up and thinks mm-hmm. that wheat and gluten is the same thing, which they're not. But gluten, you know, there's a lot of debate about whether it's how we've modified, and there is genetically modified wheat, though it's supposedly not on the market.
Right.
You know, there's been a lot of changes to wheat, and even more ancient grains, or cousins of wheat, like farro and einkorn. Some people will say that they can tolerate easier, but if you are gluten sensitive, or you have, especially if you have celiac disease, or you have an autoimmune disease, I just personally think that you should avoid it all. And the easy way for everybody, if you're brand new to this diet, to know, generally speaking, where gluten is found is think of the acronym BROWS, B-R-O-W-S. B is for barley, rye is the R, O is for oats, which are contaminated, so you have to make sure if you do see oats or you want to buy oats that they're marked gluten-free, W is for wheat, and S is for spelt, which is actually a cousin of or type of wheat. So that is a good, I think, a good sort of a starting point for the conversation.
Absolutely. I love that acronym. That's super cute. See, this is why you're good at this, because you come up with things like that. It's brilliant.
It's the simple, practical stuff that I love, because I want, you know, I go to you to say, okay, what's the science?
and then you can start falling asleep 2 minutes after I start talking.
No, it's what I want to do is to be able to translate that to people into terms that are simple, clear, and usable. And I think that there's a need for that. And I actually worked for my father for 10 years, who's an ophthalmologist and an eye surgeon. And that was my job, was to translate his doctor speak to the patients so that they understood what was going on in a very simple way that wasn't scary, and that they knew what to do. They understood the steps. So that's why I love what I do.
No, it's an incredibly vital, right, like piece of the puzzle. So, okay, so if we, you know, so the lens I look through, right, is that we've been, you know, a gluten-free species for 99% of our ancestral history, right? And so, and you talked about how gluten itself has evolved even from sort of ancient wheat to modern, and now it's, you know, a 150,000 gene-producing plant, you know, complete with many, many, you know, 23,000 potential allergenic proteins and 6 sets of chromosomes, and it's just this, like, you know, monster version of what it potentially was historically, and even that is a relatively recent introduction, right? So there's a lot, I guess, I think a lot of sort of sense in questioning its role in sort of, you know, modern day health. But there's also this sort of counter pressure, you know, people suggesting that this fad, right, has been overblown, and that people don't even know what gluten is, right, and they're adopting this, you know, sort of meme that gluten-free is healthy, and, you know, questioning whether it could really be the panacea that some providers and individuals suggest it is. I mean, right, like you went into this with one health goal in mind, and in fact, you had all of these unintended and unanticipated benefits, right, because this is root cause resolution, right? So when you get to the root of a problem, you're probably going to rehabilitate more systems than just the one symptom that you were focused on. So do you think that it's overstating it to say that it's worth, you know, it's worth it for, how would you fill in the blank, for anyone with, you know, this symptom or that symptom or this diagnosis or that, you mentioned celiac, obviously, to consider a gluten-free trial? I mean, my perspective is that there probably isn't a human on earth who wouldn't benefit from a potential trial if they have even a single health complaint. So I tend to be a bit absolutist about it. I don't know if you agree or if you think that it should really be reserved for people who have gastrointestinal complaints, or what your perspective is.
Well, this is my feeling. I don't understand why we get so upset about it being a quote-unquote fad. Because the problem is that there are cultures on this planet that have never eaten wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So there are naturally gluten-free cultures. So this idea that we need wheat, we have to eat wheat, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And are you going to say that the cultures, like there are Latino cultures that don't eat wheat. We might not be super happy that their diet is based upon corn,
right?
But they don't eat wheat. So at least from that perspective, they're not consuming that type of gluten, and that's a whole other, you and I could go on a whole other diversion about that. But here's the thing. There are so many symptoms that people can experience when they are starting to come down with an autoimmune disease, which you and I on other platforms have talked mm-hmm. extensively about. Things that seem really common, like for me, I had all these digestive issues, and I sort of ignored them. I thought, well, my family has digestive issues. It must run in my family. That must be normal. What drove me to the doctors was fatigue, because I felt that at 27, I should be able to wake up and not feel drugged in the morning after sleeping for 11 hours. And this was not one time. This was on a consistent basis for weeks.
Right.
So that's what drove me to the doctors. And the problem is, and as you have shared, and I'm sure you could speak more about and probably have, is that autoimmunity is something that takes time. So if you have a complaint of issues, or many issues that you have complaints about and you just don't feel well, it might behoove you to try taking gluten out, even if it's for 2 weeks. Just fully take it out and see what happens. From there, my suggestion would be, and this is my greatest regret, from there I would suggest that people go find out if they have celiac disease. Doing a 2-week trial is not going to heal years and years of damage. Mm-hmm. It's not going to change the outcome of finding out if you have celiac disease. But I live in limbo. I have no diagnosis. I have the diagnosis of gluten sensitivity.
Right.
But if I knew if I had celiac disease or not, I would now know if I had a 30% increased chance of getting more autoimmune diseases.
Right.
I now don't have that.
Right.
So that would be my biggest suggestion to people is give it a shot. See how it is. And you know what? At the end of the day, if you feel well, it's not really anyone's business to tell you why you should or shouldn't eat wheat. Your body is your own barometer, and however you feel best is how you feel, and you should go with that.
It is amazing, though, right, how much social pressure there is, because if you think of the standard American diet, you think of cereal for breakfast and sandwich for lunch, pasta for dinner, throw a bagel in there somewhere, some cookies and crackers and pretzels. I mean, these are, you know, it's like an IV infusion practically of gluten all day, every day for the average American. So you're really opting out of a lot of social conventions when you decide to eliminate this from your diet. So maybe it's a good segue to sort of talk about how do you recommend that people start to implement this? What is sort of the first step, let's say, once your provider has recommended it, or once you sort of decide that you're inspired to try it, you know, what do you think is the place to start?
So the first place to start is learning the acronym BROWS mm-hmm. to begin with, and understanding what gluten is, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I would start with your food and your medication, basically anything that would go on or near or in your mouth. Those are the most important points of entry. Then you can start to deal with some of the other more lifestyle issues. So you want to learn, you know, what foods gluten exists in naturally. And actually, by doing so, it makes you savvier when you eat out at restaurants because, for example, I was at a restaurant some time ago that had on their menu, show you as an ingredient, because they did actually show their ingredients. I know what shoyu is. It's a form of soy sauce that has wheat in it.
Mm.
But a normal person who wouldn't know that might not know to ask what shoyu was.
Right.
And would think, and it was actually included for some reason in a gluten-free dish. So had I not asked and assumed, oh, they must have gotten gluten-free shoyu.
Yeah.
Right? You have to ask. You always have to double check. And that's part of this process, too, is becoming vigilant for yourself, not in a mean or bossy way,
right.
But you are your own advocate. No one's going to care more than you, and maybe your family, you know, will care how you feel after you have a meal or you eat a product, any of that stuff. You're the person that's going to have to deal with it, which means that you have to be your own best advocate. So all of these things are about taking care of yourself, and ultimately, I also like to invite people to see the transition to eating gluten-free, especially if they find that they are actually sensitive to gluten, as an invitation to making yourself a priority.
Mm.
It's a shift in, rather than it being some medical reason and you're strapped to this and you're a victim and it's unfair that you can't have the cake, it's so-and-so's birthday, you see it as this is a really powerful opportunity to say, hey, I'm important, my health is important, this one moment, in the grand scheme of things, I don't need to be sick for 4 days or a month or however long afterwards over one piece of cake. I'm too important for that.
Yeah, taking your health into your own hands, sort of releasing your dependency on, sort of a medication doctor visit-driven health model, right? I mean,
exactly.
I couldn't agree more. It's a means to creating agency.
Exactly. And I think the last part of this is learning how to navigate through a grocery store because, oh my, there are some really good grocery stores out there that do gluten-free right, and there are some others that are a total disaster that will put gluten-filled version right next to the gluten-free version in the gluten-free aisle. So you always have to be
on guard.
Vigilant about what you pick up and make sure to read the ingredients because, again, I've heard like Walmart, for example. I don't shop at Walmart, and I would assume most of your listeners don't. But if you do and that's all that's available to you, just know that Walmart, unfortunately, does not have a good track record with the way that they label and set up gluten-free items in their store. But most of the food in the grocery store that's around the perimeter, the majority of it is naturally gluten-free. And that's what I invite people to always check out, is look for that which happens to be gluten-free, rather than always looking for a gluten-free label.
Yeah.
So when I walk into the grocery store, the first spot I go is to the wall of green in the produce aisle. That's the first spot. Go there. Fill your cart up in that section first, and then begin to meander through the fruit section. I find most people buy way too much fruit and not enough vegetables, and so we want to focus on that. All of those are naturally gluten-free. And then you could buy frozen wild-caught fish, which is always really healthy and a great option. Just make sure there's no sauces or spices or added breadings to it, just the fish itself. And then you've got, meats and, some people are eating dairy products. There are some dairy products that are gluten-free, some that aren't. I'm not a big fan of them since I don't really eat them. But you want to be careful when it comes to just the meat department in general. Avoid things that have seasonings and spices and breadcrumbs. And if you're concerned about how they were processed, ask the butcher behind the counter and just say, hey, were there any other products that, say, went through the meat grinder that you included that might have had wheat in the spicing?
Mm-hmm.
Just always ask. You never know, because I found out that sometimes they do use mixtures that have wheat in them. So you want to just always do due diligence, and that might be one spot where you would want to look for some labels, especially if it's more of a product-based thing like sausages and hot dogs and hamburgers where there is a nutrition label involved.
Right. So if the general advice is to eat food that doesn't actually have a label on it, so also known as actual whole food, and the secondary advice is to know how to read a label. What do you think are some of the, because I know this is something I learned, later on, some of the sort of terms or words that gluten is sort of hidden in, that people should be aware of, right? Like, because it's probably not always going to say, wheat, right? Like, if there are any sort of, tricks to know in terms of reading labels.
Well, here's the thing. As of August this month, the FDA's gluten-free ruling goes into effect.
Mm-hmm.
So products now, if they contain gluten, they can't just put gluten-free on there. So that's the first thing I will say. If you see a product that says gluten-free on it or free from gluten, those products are supposed to be tested. They're not required, but they're supposed to be tested according to the FDA.
Okay.
So you don't necessarily have to worry about them as much. You still, if you have celiac disease, especially, you might want to call them and just double check how they process things, because they could say, oh, well, we do actually make these I don't know, these cookies, we'll just say cookies, for example, we do actually make these cookies on the same line as ones with wheat. Mm-hmm. They're tested. And you might go, you know, I don't feel comfortable eating that. And I wouldn't blame you. I don't generally ever eat products that are made on the same line or equipment as other things with wheat in them. Mm-hmm. I don't ever do that. However, there are labels that will say this product is made in the same facility as other products that contain, say, wheat, nuts, shellfish, whatever, the other allergens. That's not such a big deal. As long as they are containing the ingredients in such a way that there's no risk of cross-contamination and that they're making sure to use separate equipment. Separate equipment is really key, as are the storage of the ingredients. Mm-hmm. So looking for a certified gluten-free label is really important if you are going to buy products. And here's the other thing that people get upset about in regards to the quote-unquote fad, that if you go into the grocery store and say you pick up a bag of lentils, for example, whether and this is someone who's just starting off on their journey, they might not be eating paleo yet or legume and grain-free, and they'll see a gluten-free label on that. That is not a fad. That is telling the person that those ingredients were separated, kept totally separate from ingredients that could potentially contain wheat. So it is important, even if you see dry basic ingredients, you want to know where they've been. So you can't shop in the bulk bins. Those are off limits to people who need to eat gluten-free.
Got it. Okay, that's super helpful. And maybe sort of speak a bit about, because you alluded to it, and I know it's something we've talked about before, what are the pitfalls, right? Because probably all of us have heard about women complaining about gaining weight on a gluten-free diet. You talked about having this health setback, sort of delayed, reaction many months after beginning a gluten-free diet. So what are some of the problems in your, opinion, with gluten-free packaged foods, even if they're certified? What are some of the pitfalls there?
Well, the pitfalls are, number one, they might not really be gluten-free, FYI.
Yeah.
There's no, just because they're test-based, they have a label on them, doesn't mean that gluten-free products don't get recalled periodically for traces of gluten or having more than what they should.
Right.
So that is one problem. The bigger problem with why people, generally speaking, get sick, which is what happened to me, is that gluten-free products are made generally from the highest glycemic flours and starches that there are.
Right.
And all of those, they get turned into sugar. Everything is loaded with sugar. The cookies have tons of sugar added to them to make up for the bulk of the flour that's missing. Then you've got rice flour. That is one of the highest glycemic flours, no matter whether it's brown or white, my friends. It really is both high glycemic. And then you've got all these other random starches, tapioca, potato. I mean, we know that white potatoes are on the no-no list for diabetics. So why would we think that a product completely made of potato starch is healthy?
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Nor is tapioca. It's a very high glycemic starch. So you have this double whammy of these very high glycemic ingredients that are just not good for your blood sugar. They're not good for hormonal regulation. And on top of it, a lot of the ingredients, including those, are really inflammatory. They're gut irritants. The canola oil and the vegetable oils are gut irritants, which are not good for somebody that may have gut issues. So if you are like gluten sensitive or celiac or you have autoimmune diseases, there's many doctors out there, which I'm sure you're probably one of them, Dr. Berger, who feel like the gut is is probably not doing so good, and you got to look there. So you really want to avoid those. And then my biggest one that I am really grossed out about these days is xanthan gum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like a disgusting slime that's produced by bacteria on potentially wheat, corn, other GMO crops like soy. And that slime helps give these gluten-free alternatives this binder effect. And to me, that's disgusting. There's a lot of people that are sensitive to it, and I don't want to eat an industrialized ingredient. And that's what a lot of this stuff is, to make gluten-free products look and feel and taste like what you kind of remember gluten-filled counterparts to be. So, I ended up with adrenal fatigue and candida after a year of eating my little gluten-free swapped diet. And I don't entirely blame just the diet, but realize, too, that your body undergoes an incredible amount of stress for however long it's been sick. I don't know what my starting date was in getting sick. It may have been my whole entire life. It could have been when I was a teenager. I just don't know. But it was years. So I have to think about how I can take care of my body the best and put in it the best fuel possible. And those kind of products, as convenient as they are not good for you.
Absolutely, and I would echo that with just emphasis on the fact that most of the time when you're eating, you know, particularly unlabeled or non-organic gluten-free products, right, it's going to be made with genetically modified, aka, you know, herbicide saturated corn and soy, and there are many providers, you know, in America today whose primary intervention is to put people on a GMO-free diet, and they turn lives around because of what we're learning about the deleterious effects of you know, these sort of like totally manufactured interspecies food products. So you sort of can go very wrong, right? So just prioritizing gluten-free over a broader view of what makes up sort of more healthful food choices. So
yeah, and plus I would also argue that it could really make you go broke.
yes.
You could literally go broke buying those gluten-free food products. As an example, in my book, The Savvy Gluten-Free Shopper, I actually found a study that compared, I think it was like 56 normal gluten-filled products to their gluten-free counterparts, and they were able to determine that gluten-free products were on average 242% more expensive.
Wow, that's incredible. I love that statistic.
So your diet, so if you're like, okay, I eat a standard American diet and I'm just going to go gluten-free, your diet just caught 2.5 times more expensive.
Unnecessarily, yeah.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Incredible. That's awesome. This is like, what more do you need to know to convince you to eat some broccoli? So, awesome, Jen. So I want to talk, before we wrap up, I want to talk about something you've got cooking, which is the Women's Gluten-Free Health Summit. So I want to hear a little bit about what your intention was. You know, I'm a huge supporter of the idea, obviously, and involved in it. So I want people to know how they can access it, what it should do for them in terms of information, and what they can expect.
Yeah, so the Women's Gluten-Free Health Summit is launching the second week of September, and it's available to anyone, anywhere. I mean, obviously, it's kind of targeted toward the ladies, as the name suggests, but guys are welcome, too. And the whole point of this summit is really to inspire and empower women to take charge of their health and their diets. I am very, very tired of hearing people say that they hate the way that they eat, they hate the way that they feel, they can't get any answers, they don't understand what's going on with their health, and their doctor doesn't listen to them. Let's get out of that continual tape playing in your brain that says that you're just stuck. And let's figure out how to get back to living a good life, because it doesn't have to be that hard and that complicated. And there's also a lot of information that's missing from the conversation that, like, for you and I, Dr. Brogan, things make sense. It's great. We understand it. But for the regular person, especially the newbie, they might not know what leaky gut is. They might not know that it's the same thing as intestinal permeability. They might not know about the increased risk of autoimmunity when you are diagnosed with one autoimmune disease and all these other factors that are very important. And what questions do you ask your doctor? What tests are most important? What is connected? And so for me, it's about shining light where the conversation seems to have these dark patches that leave people, and especially women who are the caretakers of their children and their families and their partners and spouses and their parents, it leaves them behind. And I want everyone to come into this conversation so that we are actually having a full conversation with the community rather than talking about how big of a fad gluten-free is, because to me that's a distraction from the bigger picture. For me, I want to see people get better. I don't care why someone eats gluten-free. If you feel better, great. That's good
Absolutely.
For you. So, you know, that's one reason why, like, for you, you have come and so generously given such a brilliant amount of information to people about, you know, their thyroid and how that affects mental health. And we have 22 other practitioners that have so generously given their time. And all of the recordings are accessible, so you could be on your way to your kid's sports practice or whatever. You can listen to everything. You can access all the information. It's simple. It's easy. And it's condensed down to a 30-minute format so that...
Yeah.
You don't have to sit and spend the whole day listening to these things.
Right, which forces the presenters to be more efficient with their information delivery. I thought that was a brilliant touch.
So, yeah, that's my gift. I really come to see that when you lift people up, the community changes as a whole for the better. I'm not really interested in the infighting and the backbiting and who's a fad and who said this on what talk show.
Right.
I don't think that's helpful. I want to see people live vibrant and healthy lives, and I think that we can do that, and through this event, that's my mission, is to actually do it.
That's brilliant. I think, you know, I'm such a very enthusiastic about this model of sort of, you know, education delivery, I guess, you know, as a commodity in terms of the sort of e-summits. I think that it's absolutely the way that we are empowering patients firsthand, trying to help them navigate, you know, what's myth and what's fact on the internet by creating these sort of like packaged, digestible, you know, expert-driven, you know, information filled experiences. So I'm super excited. I love anything that is geared towards women. I think that, you know, it brings us all together in a shared effort. So I'm a huge supporter. So is there a website that people should head to? Or
yes, they can go to gfsummit.com, and it's free to sign up, and you'll get access to all 23 interviews, plus we've got a lot of fun giveaways and bonuses and extras and all sorts of stuff, and every presenter has given gifts to everybody that comes through, so expect to get a lot of information, but to also have action points handed to you that are manageable and very digestible so that you're not leaving feeling overwhelmed. Instead, again, the idea is to inspire and empower, and I do feel that we have absolutely met that goal. So, yeah, gfsummit.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jen, so much for being on here, and we'll be sure to spread the word about the summit, and also want to send people, which we'll be linking to your brilliant website, which is, as you can tell, you know, just an incredible resource for anyone who wants to take this, you know, into their day-to-day living. So thank you for coming, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And the 20th, we'll be listening to Mary Coyle interview Nicole Glassman. They'll be talking about mind-body-spirit connections and physical manifestations of emotional pathology. So I think that should be really fascinating. So I want to thank everyone for listening. Until next time.
Shining, and we'll never be afraid.